think our chances are of surviving through the end of this century? What do you think the chances are that the United States will be involved in a gigantic global nuclear arms race almost immediately, and that eventually we will be dragged into a nuclear bomb war before the end of the decade of the 1980s? What do you think the chances are for the bottom dropping out of the economy and an absolute gigantic collapse of all the banks and the lending institutions, the stock market and everything else, and the American people going into a new impoverishment? There's an awful lot of gloom and doom about these days. Books about Armageddon, Dr. Billy Graham has one out about how to cope with the problems today up till the time of Armageddon. Hal Lindsey advertises his book about Countdown to Armageddon. And we hear about Armageddon all the time. Now, Armageddon in biblical prophecy is supposed to be that great war in which hundreds of millions are involved, the last climactic, gargantuan war in which, if it were not for God's intervention, all of humankind would be exterminated from the face of the earth. The other day, well, that was a few weeks ago, here in Tyler, there was about a half-page ad in the newspaper, and some guy came on, and it was a huge ad. It was kind of flee from the wrath to come. It predicted a gigantic earthquake in California, and I mean, he set the date, which is long since gone by now, and I think the time of the day, and maybe even the minute, and he said, write to all of your friends and relatives out in California, tell them to flee, and he said the new coastline is going to be somewhere else. People are always predicting this. It's like someone once said, the safest thing for a prophet to do is to predict the inevitable. And it is inevitable that sometime a great calamity is going to strike California, yes, but these seers and sages and prophets who for some reason would like to get into the act and overnight get credentials based upon incredible human suffering, it's a little bit tough to handle. So the very next day, I wish, now this didn't happen, but I wish it could have, that there would have been another ad. Hey, you guys, I apologize. I'm a horrible false prophet. I'm a fake. I'm a charlatan. I'm a fraud. What I told you about the earthquake, well, I goofed, you know. It's too bad the guy couldn't have come forward and done that. I wanted to do it for him, but I thought that would be a little bit unkind. People have said for years that I talk about doomsday and the end of the world. No, I do not. I talk about a transitional period in which civilization as we know it is going to be so dramatically altered it will be virtually unrecognizable by the beginning of the next century. Now, isn't it strange that almost as if with one voice, sages present and past, heads of state, premiers, prime ministers, past presidents, late presidents, such as Eisenhower, Kennedy, and others, have said the only real solution for the tremendous problems confronting humankind is the creation of some sort of a super state, the creation of some world governing authority, a world government with one world president, one world parliament or congress. That would be one world army or police force, one set of executive and legislative and judiciary divisions of government, which would handle all the problems worldwide. And this is not just the idea of a group of high school seniors that are coming up with some philosophy about how to solve the problems of Upper Michigan. These are people, serious people, who have devoted their lives to public service, who have been in the military, scientists, historians, and sometimes the clergy gets into the act. And they talk about one world ruling government. Now, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And I'll explain that statement, because I'm going to show you, probably not in this program, but I'll try in this program as close as I can, and certainly by the next one or the one following, we'll take as much time as we need, that the only solution propounded by some of the greatest minds we have produced in the last several decades is not a solution at all. But I will lead you, just like the proverbial horse to the water trough, up to an inevitable conclusion that is the only and the inescapable conclusion of the solution for the problems of mankind, and probably you won't like it and you might not accept it. Now, I'm hoping that you're an exception. You might. A few might, but many will not. And if I could go before the United Nations, if I could go before the Congress of the United States in session and seriously propound the great solution I'm going to give you in the next couple of television programs and say, this is the only way to solve our problems. Well, just before they called the funny farm and the ambulance came around the corner with a big red as on the side, you know, and the guys with the huge nets, and they came in to grab me, I would probably see everybody in the Security Council of the United Nations, and over here would be senators and congressmen and the members of the cabinet, lying on the floor, rolling, holding their sides, giggling in uncontrollable laughter, saying, this guy's got to be crazy. Did you hear what he said? And it would be the most hilarious thing they had ever heard propounded for the salvation of humankind. Well, what are the problems of the world, and why would serious-minded statesmen say that the only solution for the very survival of humankind is one world government? First and foremost, it's difficult to get a handle on the problems of the world, and to try to do that in a couple of telecasts is, of course, admittedly a very difficult task, but let's do it as best we possibly can. I wish I had, right here in the studio, a sort of a plastic chart. And so let's imagine that I do have one, and we will talk about some of the problems of the world as revealed by various think tanks like the Club of Rome that have published their books with their charts and graphs, showing the problems of humankind in graphic form. If I had the first graph, or the first chart right here with me, it would be that of the population explosion, the most ominous, the biggest single problem facing humankind today, one that is almost never in the news these days, though it was about a decade or so ago, but one which is an impending, ominous problem which can bring about food wars, global disruptions, which can bring about the rise of despotism, another problem we'll talk about a little later on, and therefore which could trigger nuclear war, wars for the dwindling means of survival among starving populaces of some of the big so-called third world have-not countries of this earth. Now here's what the population explosion means. It means that human beings are increasing at a far faster rate than they are dying. It means that we have already crossed the food versus population curve to where the major food producers of the world, including the United States, Canada, Australia, and some, well, Australian sheep hides and, of course, wool, but Argentina and the great grain producers of the world, which are able to feed populaces beside themselves, and that's certainly true of the United States, Canada, and Argentina, but it's not true of most of the other countries of the world, because most countries have to import even their own means of survival, such as India, and other nations that are monsoon countries dependent upon the whims and the vagaries of the weather. Now, when we see in primetime television an ad from, say, care packages, or we see people both from federal agencies or private that are trying to get us to send our dollars in to help defeat starvation, we see these little black kids, pictures of them in the sub-Sahara, with those grotesquely swollen little bellies that show them in the last stages of malnutrition, and we know they're about to die. These people say, save the children. The guy you've probably seen the ad where the guy is singing about the little children. And it just about breaks your heart. I'm about to give you one of the most incredible ironies, an ugly fact with which we have to deal. We hear about the Vietnamese boat people and the various refugees, the incredible story coming out of Cambodia, perhaps millions of people that have been killed over there by the communist government that took over. And it just wrenches your heart. And you say, how can we help these people? And so in California, for example, are who knows how many tens of thousands of Vietnamese going to school and looking for more Vietnamese teachers. We have the problem of the Cuban refugee. Sometimes these nations, either as a result of war, some military coup d'etat, or some other reason, there are millions of refugees that have to go somewhere else to find a means of survival. And we, good old Uncle Sam, are always the people who were looked upon as the most altruistic and magnanimous. We're the people that apparently have the space and the will and the money and the affluence to take all these people in. Isn't it grotesque to come face to face with the fact that though this starvation is so unacceptable and though it's so ugly to see these little babies in those advanced stages of malnutrition, that people are not dying fast enough? Isn't that an incredible statement to make? The world cannot feed its present populations. Every 23 days, the world adds the equivalent of a New York City. Every year, China adds the equivalent of a Canada. Every year in this world, millions more are born, usually to the families and the people who can least afford it, in those third world so-called developing countries where in spite of government attempts to try to slow population, only two notable examples of that would be to some extent a little bit of success in India, but mostly a great deal of success in both Japan and the United States. But most of the other countries, especially in Central and South America, all of Africa, Southeast Asia, and especially China, the nations that can afford those increasing populations the least are the ones that are growing the more rapidly.
So you have to make this observation. If we were all the same color, if we saluted the same flag, if we spoke the same language, if we had the same religion and prayed to the same God, in short, if there were none of the problems extant that deeply divide humankind into racial and group and tribal instincts, into chauvinism and nationalism, into their narrow-minded religious philosophies that make them hate other people, if those things didn't exist, the population explosion all by itself could threaten the very extinction of mankind. Okay, that's problem number one. And back here in my imaginary chart, we have a plastic overlay we flipped over onto the chart, and it has this giant red line. And up here in about 2002, it goes right off the top and disappears. Is that off the top? Yeah, that's off the top. It disappears. It's gone. And it looks like as it gets to the top of the chart that it almost bends over backwards. Now, we're going to take a plastic chart, the next one, and we'll lay it over this one where we can still see our red line about the population explosion, and that is world food production. And we will see this as a green line, and we'll see how the world food production line crossed and fell far below the world population line clear back in probably the late 60s, at which time the American Association for the Advancement of Science and many very serious-minded scientists, such as those in the Club of Rome. Let me tell you a little bit about the Club of Rome. But in short, all of those people said that the food versus population curve says that we're headed for food wars. We're headed for trade war and food war at some time in the future, and that means the rise of despotism and a great risk of nuclear bomb war as a direct result of overpopulation and a diminution of food supplies. Now, the think tanks, such as the Club of Rome, is merely a collection of scientists that have no special axe to grind. They represent no specific nation, no religion, no axe to grind, no special point of view, no vested interests. They are merely nuclear physicists, agronomists, horticulturalists. They're from every conceivable specialist field in the scientific family. And they study all of these known trends and curves, official government reports from countries all over the earth, the census, food production, the diminution of vital and strategic materials and things of this nature, and they come up with prognostications about the end of this century and the first decade on into the next century and so on. And they publish these things, and then we can take a look at them, and that's the stuff of which my imagined chart back here really exists. Now, to really get a handle on world conditions in the light of Bible prophecy, I want you to either write right away or give me a telephone call during normal business hours here in East Texas, and I'll give you the number. The number is area code 214-561-2525 for a subscription to this magazine. We'll send it to you free of charge. We'd like to send you some booklets I want to talk about. I've got a stack of literature to tell you about, and, of course, tape cassette programs of full-length sermons, as well as I want to send to you a list of tape-recorded messages that I've given and others with me in this effort, sometimes an hour in length, on literally dozens of topics that you can have if you'll write to Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 2525 in Tyler, Texas, 75710. Or if you'll dial area 214, those of you in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, just dial 1 and then the number, 561-2525, or those in the other area over in Fort Worth would have to dial area 214-561-2525, save you the postage and the time and the trouble of dropping a card or a letter in the mail, and request this magazine, 20th Century Watch, and especially this booklet called The Real Gospel, because believe it or not, this booklet has to do with the subject of world government, and I'm going to tell you a great deal more about it in the next couple of programs. It's free of charge and no price. The address is Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 2525, Tyler, Texas, 75710, or dial area 214-561-2525. Now, from such reports as that of the Club of Rome, we can see our food versus population curve has fallen far below the ability of governments to feed their own people. It's shocking when you find out that even in the United States, we sometimes dip way below our national emergency footing food reserves. And that way back in the 1960s, for example, the largest peacetime armada in all of history was plying the sea waves, sending millions of metric tons of food grains from the United States to a potentially starving Indian nation, the nation of India, and we have had to come to the aid of such peoples time and time again. The so-called Green Revolution that said they were going to increase the yield per acre by who knows how many bushels over in the Southeast Asian areas, especially in Vietnam and in the Philippines, turned out to be a disaster in many ways. At least it did not meet the hopes and the expectations of those who said this new strain of wheat or of rice was going to really feed these populations. Matter of fact, it proved to be so unpalatable that many people threw it out to the pigs. They found out that through monoculture, they ran the risk of heightened root rust or stem rot and various other diseases that would attack this monoculture type of rice or of wheat. And then they had to spray prodigiously with the herbicides and fungicides and pesticides. And it also required a great deal more fertilizer. And all of these things, of course, are oil-based from the petrochemical industry. And here were nations afflicted just like we were with the beginning of the Arab oil embargo, so that their balance of payments deficits went out of sight. They could not export enough to earn the money to pay for the very expensive energy they had to import, including bunker fuels, but especially the oil-based pesticides, herbicides, and of course the fertilizers that are used to such an extent in such nations as India and elsewhere. And they simply couldn't afford it. So our second overlay would maybe have a green curve, and it would show food just sort of dying out about midway in our chart and going off the chart way below the skyrocketing population curve that we have. Now the next chart that we might flip over would be one with which we're increasingly familiar, and that is the energy crisis. A lot of people still want to think the energy crisis was contrived, and maybe to some extent there are opportunists who would do precisely that. But make no mistake about the fact that we live in a finite globe. We live in a little ecosphere, a narrow envelope of life on a little speck called the Earth in the blackness of nothingness of space. Our Earth is like one grain of sand on a limitless seashore when compared with our own galaxy, and there are billions of galaxies. And this is the only place where life as we know it exists. And yet, when man looks at the uninhabitable parts of the Earth, the fact that we're mostly oceans, then secondly, the vast deserts, the Gobi Desert, the Sahara Desert, the Great Western American Desert, and so on, the Kalahari Desert in Africa, the Great Desert of the northern part of Chile. Then you make the comment that the mountains, and by the time you get above 11, 12,000 feet, populations are thinner and thinner, so people don't live up there. And there are hundreds of peaks, K2 and the others, Everest and the like, way above 22,000 feet over in the Nepalese mountains. And we know that down in the chain of mountains along Chile and Argentina, like Aconcagua, 22,000 feet. People don't live up there. So we live very close to sea level, and we live in the arable and the inhabitable parts of the Earth. I remember doing radio programs so many times and television programs on the subject of pollution and population and the food versus population curve. And one time I got a letter from a guy, I think up in New England, and he was really excited. He said, "Garner Ted, you're an idiot. You're really crazy. You don't know what you're talking about." He said, "Look, I live up here, and there are forests everywhere, and there are lakes and ponds." He said, "We got hardwoods, and we got lots of verdant rolling fields, and there's lots of room up here." He said, "There's more room up here. We could have a whole lot more people living here than we do." Maybe he's like Van Loon, the famous historian and philosopher who once, in trying to give us a concept of just how big we really are, said that all of humankind could be packed together into a cube 1/2 mile square, or a cubicle, 1/2 mile in all directions. And that sort of blows your mind. Is that right? You know, and we begin to think, wow, you know, we're not very big. I once heard somebody say that every ship that has ever sailed the seas, including the first guy that got on a log and paddled across a creek up to the time of the great super 300,000 ton dead weight, you know, tankers of today, and aircraft carriers and battleships, every ship that's ever been made could easily be anchored inside San Francisco Bay at the same time. Now, this is just an effort in comparison. And so, perhaps thinking of this, he was saying, well, we got a lot of room up here, and that's not the point. The point is that certain arable acres are capable of only producing so many bushels of so many foodstuffs, and that there are so many mouths to feed, and the guy simply didn't seem to get the point that an awful lot of our land is non-arable, and that which is shrinking and diminishing every single year. Not only is there less and less humus at the top of the soil, and more desert and depleted soil, partially as a result of man's interference, but also partially because of the gobbling up of millions of acres per year by the interstate system and by asphalt driveways and the expansion of cities, like in Los Angeles, where people build a huge city on some of the most beautiful land in the world, and then they go out and farm the desert. And so don't get the idea, because you look out your bathroom window and there's no neighbor within 100 feet, that there's still a lot of room where you live, and the population explosion is not true. And don't get the idea that the energy crisis is not true. No new oil is being made today. You know, way back, when was it, in the late 40s, early 50s, as a result of the science of war, when our women began wearing nylons and we began to enter the age of synthetics and petrochemicals began giving us everything from this pen I'm holding to probably a part of the fabric I'm wearing to the pantyhose that women wear and to the glasses that we put on our faces and to building materials and new lightweight building materials and the like. Well, we began voraciously devouring a fossil fuel source. That means a non-renewable fuel source. And our world has finite limits, and we are pumping it out of the ground, searching farther and farther afield, going up into like the Dogger Bank and the British Bank off of the northern coast of England, and up here on the area off Prudhoe Bay. Offshore drilling is a giant environmental problem with the huge spills like in Mexico last year and this and that, and we're all familiar with that. But the point is, there is no new oil being put into the ground. There aren't any more billions of dinosaurs dying for us today and being buried about 20-some thousand feet deep. That was a cataclysm that took place in the far distant past. And so it is true that we are gradually using up, rapidly I might say, using up our dwindling energy supplies. And serious-minded scientists say that we've got to look toward alternative energy resources in the decades ahead of us, and we ought to do it very, very quickly indeed. So they're talking about geothermal energy, they're talking about solar energy, they're talking about methods to somehow use rotting foods or corn husks or whatnot and put it in your gas tank. Some people have even said that they can get a few miles out of chicken litter, and let's hope that that's true. There are all kinds of ideas about how to propel our automobiles from cutting a hole in the floor and getting your wife a pair of tennis shoes. I'm just kidding. But anyway, it is true. There really are these problems of the diminution of strategic materials, and we cannot kid ourselves that it's all contrived by the big oil companies to drive the price up. The fact is, we are using our billions of gallons of non-renewable energy resources, and it isn't being replaced in the soil. Now, believe it or not, the next chart we would flip over might be metals and strategic materials, raw materials and the like, because the same comment can be made. These two are non-renewable. A lot of it is recyclable, but it tends not to be recycled except in the case of maybe aluminum beer cans. There are people who are conducting a very brisk business these days in strategic materials. You could get from your stockbroker, for example, a dossier of some sort that would list things such as titanium and germanium and molybdenum and chromium and bauxite and the like, and you can find that you can actually purchase various crates in flats of these metals because people know that they're becoming in very short supply. They know that American governmental recommendations about where we ought to have strategic reserves for these metals that are used in aerospace and to produce our supersonic fighters and to produce all the materials like heat shields on re-entering capsules for orbital satellites and the like. And they know that these are becoming in short supply, and also that there is a very grave problem of keeping the trading lanes open with some nations, like in Africa, where there can be violent overthrows, the nation of Libya, where Muammar Gaddafi has been known to say a lot of hateful things about the United States, and yet we get oil and other things from him, and so it goes. Sometimes you cannot guarantee that you're going to keep these lines of supply open. So there's a brisk business these days, speculators purchasing these rare and diminishing strategic materials, putting them in a warehouse somewhere and waiting until they're almost unavailable and hoping the price goes out of sight, and then they can turn a profit. But this merely illustrates my point that it's not only energy, it is also in the area of raw materials and of vital strategic materials. Now, the next we're going to cover, and I see that I'll not have time to cover it all because, as I said at the beginning of the program, even trying to get a handle on the problems confronting the world, as the Club of Rome did, my plastic overlay that I'm showing you, of pollution, I haven't gotten to that yet, population, food versus population curve, energy, and the diminution of raw materials and strategic metals and minerals. Now we have to deal, the next time, with the proliferation of nuclear weapons. And that is a giant problem. We're going to take a look at that and see, once again, that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. I'm going to lead you step by step up to the reason these men in the Club of Rome, and why the Dwight Eisenhowers or John Fitzgerald Kennedys and the sages and seers, the historians and the philosophers, some of whom had a rather gloomy doomsday approach or point of view about the future of mankind, why they say that the only solution is one world governing authority, one global government with one world police force capable of carrying out its laws. And that means the absolution of everything we call sovereignty. But at the same time, they say it means the solution to the world's problems and the only way to prevent a global nuclear war from exterminating mankind. Now, most of us play a little game I call hide-and-go-seek. We like to hide our minds and our eyes from the problems of today and go seek our own pleasures. We don't even like to hear programs like this oftentimes. People get tired of hearing the sharp, stark, that's a new word I just made up, realities of the world in which we live. We just don't like to deal with it. It kind of comes into our living room. We say, hold it, I don't want to hear that. Please entertain me some more. Talk about how you love the Lord or something like a lot of people are doing. And I do. And I do talk about that too, and I will on this program from time to time, as I have about the last 3 or 4 weeks for those of you that have been watching. But will you please do yourself a favor and get this booklet, The Real Gospel, that's not it, The Real Gospel, and find out what it really is. It is a vast subject, a lot bigger than a lot of people think, and it has to do with the programs that I'm doing right now on world government. Just write to Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 2530, Tyler, Texas, 75710. If I told you box 2525 before, that's still accurate. You can do that too. But that's also our telephone number. If you want to dial area 214-561-2525, we'll send it to you and get in the mail the same day that you give us your name and address. And of course, it will not be given to anyone else. So do yourself a favor and get this booklet and also 20th Century Watch magazine. Tell your friends and neighbors about this telecast, and I'll see you right here at the same time, same place next week.